Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, the show where we cover the news from the video games industry from the past couple of weeks. My name is Patrick Beja, and today we are going to be talking about a bunch of things, including a long-running series that has been disappointing in the past few years, and that fans had high hopes for that just happened. Of course, I'm talking about X19, the Xbox insider thing. Haha, see what I did there? No, of course, we're going to be talking about Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, Modern Warfare, Call of Duty, Death Stranding, a little bit, Pokemon a little bit. And who better to do all of this with than Emma Kent, reporter, journalist from Eurogamer. I don't know what your official title is.
Yeah, reporter. That's the
reporter.
One.
Reporter. Excellent. Yeah, welcome back to the show.
Yay. It's been about a year, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, and thank you as well for actually delaying our recording, which we planned before all of these things were in clearer view from yesterday to today, because we can actually talk about what's been happening in the games industry.
We can talk about Star Wars now, right?
That's amazing. So yeah, we're going to be talking about all of this and a bunch of additional little news, some disappointing stuff from Stadia, some exciting stuff from Shadow, a bunch of other things. But yeah, let's start with the game that you most recently reviewed for Eurogamer. That is Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. Let me give you a little bit of context first, and then you can crush all my hopes and dreams, if that works for you.
Sure.
So, of course, EA has had the license for Star Wars for a very long time, several years, and they haven't released a lot of games, at least. I guess there were a couple of Battlefront games, and that's almost it, which was... It's kind of mind-boggling. I'm not sure why they did it that way. But this one is a long, single-player, narrative-oriented game that is developed by Respawn Entertainment of, you know, many games fame, of course. The name is escaping me right now. The Titanfall, there you go, Giant Robots.
That's the one.
Titanfall, Apex Legends, and of course they come from Infinity Ward. Wonderful developers. So this one had a lot of hope riding on it, and I was a little bit unimpressed by the initial presentations. I thought the hero was incredibly bland. But as previews kept happening, my hopes started getting up like a Jedi in a fight and getting a little bit higher. And I bought it, installed it yesterday, woke up this morning and played it for a few hours, and I actually really like it. I played for a couple of hours. I went back to the computer to prepare for this show, loaded up your review, and then all my
absolutely crush destroyed. All your hope. Yeah. Make the Empire coming in.
Exactly.
I'm so sorry.
So yeah. You didn't like Jedi Fallen Order that much?
Yeah. Well, as I said in my review, like the annoying thing is, I thought it was brilliant for ages, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to like potentially put this up as a Game of the Year contender or something like that. And I was like, I was literally having that kind of conversation in my head, like, should it be recommended or essential? And then I kept playing, and it gets to a point in the middle where it stops introducing new planets. And the story just kind of keeps asking you to go back to the same planets you've been to. And I was like, okay, fair enough. The problem is, it's got like, well, Soulsborne-style combat is probably the best way to describe it. And that takes a lot of time to get through each enemy, which is great. It makes it challenging. But when you're having to do that several times over and over again in these really long kind of winding Metroidvania style maps, it becomes just so tedious. And you just really want to go smashing through everyone to get back to the ship and stuff like that. Because once you've done the objective, you then have like another 20-minute walk back through enemies you've already beaten and things you've already explored. And that's really where it all kind of crumbled for me.
My initial impression, the introduction is very solid.
It's really good.
The platforming is very, like, it's akin to something like, I guess, Uncharted or Tomb Raider, the newest ones. The combat is kind of Soulsborne light, as you said. The story begins, you know, it's like nothing to blow up a house about. Is that an expression? Let's make
It's fine. It's fairly like standard. You're like, oh, okay, I can see why they've chosen this. And I think visually it's great. Like the action sequences on the first planet are really, really good. I was very up for the rest of the game from that point.
I went through the first explorable zone, the one with the temple, you know, that initial planet.
Pagano. Yeah, the kind of muddy one.
Yeah.
Right?
The temple with the, like, there are big toad-like enemies. Anyway, I mean, it's the first one. And it's fun, definitely, and I explored it, but then I kind of got lost a little bit in the complicated geography of the map, and then it asked me to go back to the ship, and I was like, wait, how do I do that? And I was meandering around for like 20 minutes, but it was fine until that point, because it's been a couple of hours. I can imagine how spending 30 hours, because you say the game is about 30 hours long. Right.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I did a lot of that meandering. And at the start, I was very up for that. So if I was getting lost, I was like, oh, it's okay. I'll just go see what's down here and collect something. And I was pretty patient and happy to actually go exploring a full planet to go find stuff. And then it just kept doing that. And I lost my patience. Mm. So I reckon actually it's probably you could do it in 20 hours. A lot of my time was spent faffing around.
but is that something you can avoid, though? Because it seemed to me that I would get lost in the environment even when I wasn't trying to explore. So I'm wondering
I think they could have done a better job with some of the maps just for kind of retraversing. Like, I don't know, even like a way to set waypoints, maybe once you've done like the objective on that planet would just be so helpful. Because there are shortcuts, but they all kind of just go into like blue color once you've discovered them. So when you're starting off on a planet, it's quite easy because there's a little yellow glow that's like, okay, you haven't been here, go look down this route. And yeah, once you've actually explored it and the game's asking you to go back again, it's really hard to know which is the correct way. And I found myself just kind of, particularly on Zepho, in the caves in Zepho, wandering around the cave system quite a bit, being like, is this the right lift? I don't know. I can't really see.
Yeah, because the map is, I think it's intentional. It seems like it would be an element of game design that they want you to understand the geography and the topography of the place you're exploring so that you actually have to know the place and not just follow an arrow that tells you where to go, right? But it's...
The maps get so big.
Yeah.
And
confusing. Like there
really
are multiple
unwieldy
levels. And yeah, it's like a labyrinth almost.
It works well in early game. And yeah, this is why it gets annoying later on as well, as the story looping back on itself quite a lot.
Mm. So you have to go back to things you've already explored so you don't have the newness of the environments.
Exactly. And yeah, you're more willing to kind of explore when something's fresh, and when the game is making you go back, I think then that's like, it suddenly becomes a lot less fun than going kind of your own volition and being like, I want to go poke around this area, see if I can find something else.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. The combat seemed like it was pretty interesting, though. There's, as you mentioned, some elements of Soulsborne type gameplay. You have to be not quite as much as in, you know, Soulsborne games or Sekiro even for your parries and stuff like that. But there are elements of that. And you also lose your progress in the form of XP if you die, and you can regain it if you kill the enemy that killed you. So then you can rest, but that respawns everything around you. So definitely some elements of Soulsborne, which is, I think, a little bit unexpected for a game that is that far-reaching.
It really is like you'd consider it a mainstream game for sure, like totally. A Star Wars game that's got Disney approval, and it's bringing it to that platform, which is cool. And I do like a lot of the combat, and I think I would enjoy it more if it just didn't make me do it all the time, if that makes sense, because it does take quite a lot of concentration to kind of perform it in a satisfactory way, where you're thinking, okay, this is how I'm going to approach this enemy, and I'm going to do this tactic. And then if you're being asked to do that all the time, walking through these paths, eventually your concentration goes and you just end up hacking people, and it gets frustrating, I think, is eventually why the combat becomes a bit of a pain too. Sorry.
No, that's really disappointing because it seems like a very easy way to fix that issue would have been to introduce at some point, once you've conquered a planet, you've explored, let's say, 80% of it, you unlock fast travel or something. And I understand why
Dark Souls
they wouldn't want
has
to do that.
But, you know, like two-thirds of the way through, you get an option. So it's like limited fast travel, but nonetheless, it's very frustrating because it's a very simple fix. And I guess the reason why they don't want you to do that is because they want this exploring thing. And also at some points, like very occasionally, the story will have like a surprise thing that it throws at you on the path back to the ship. I think there might have been ways around that, but
okay, so the exploring is fun at the beginning, gets a little bit tedious. The combat is fun as well, but gets repetitive when you're forced to do it to travel through the zones over and over again. What about the other gameplay elements? The progression with the skill tree. Of course, there's a skill tree because it's a mainstream game, which I always enjoy. That seems like it could add some additional fun, you know, as you progress and unlock stuff.
Yeah. And there are specific kind of combat abilities that you can unlock through the skill tree. And it's definitely fun being like, oh, I can almost unlock, you know, like this cool lightsaber throw. And I think by the end of the game, you normally unlock all of the main stuff. I did anyway. I had a few things that I hadn't. But it's more a matter of like what you want to prioritize, I think, with your lightsaber skills. Or if you're struggling, then just get your HP up really high. Or if
but
you want to do force stuff
enough?
More, then of course.
That doesn't help enough with variety in combat, or...?
I don't know. I think...
Yeah. Sounds like it doesn't. I mean, you can just say no.
I don't know. The skills tree wasn't something that stood out to me as like something that was like, whoa, amazing. I think the things that I really enjoyed about it were the environmental storytelling. I talk about stormtroopers for like a whole paragraph in my review because they're just so good. And it's like the little details like that where Star Wars fans will be like, oh yeah, I get that reference. Or just kind of amused at the kind of general day-to-day life of stormtroopers when they're not doing anything. It's great. I love eavesdropping on them. It's the best bit.
I have to admit that reading your review, it reminded me of elements of Arkham City, I think, when I first started listening to the baddies in the city as Batman, and I was just listening to their conversations, and it was just hilarious. There was a lot of stuff that really made me smile. But you're talking about environmental storytelling, but you're also a little bit harsh on the story period of the game, which is like, it seems we're going through all of the elements and none of them, like they all break down midway through the game. The story isn't good either.
No, it really isn't. I was so surprised to see some people did enjoy the story actually, because everyone I've spoken to that I know is just not connected with it at all. Bizarre. I think the problem is that Cal is just really dull. I'm sorry, but
God, he's so bland. He's horrible.
He's so bad. Gosh, it's just also his face doesn't really seem to move. And I think at points as well in the story, he doesn't really have much empathy towards other characters. And it's not really done in a way that he's kind of being bratty. It's like, I don't know, it's just very cold person. And it's hard to sympathize with a protagonist like that. I don't know.
He seems bland in the most powerful sense of the word. He has no, I mean, even in the initial couple of hours where there are some pretty eventful things that happen to him, of course, as you would expect in the introduction of the game, as I said, I really enjoyed my first few hours and I want to keep playing. The one thing that definitely, stuck in my mind is that character is terrible. He's got nothing going for him. I'm not a judgmental person, seriously, but his face is annoying. Like,
oh my God, it is. I feel bad, but... Oh.
There are people who worked on this and designed it, but sorry, go ahead.
It's a little bit of a spoiler, but not really. I don't know. Like, at one point, quite early on, you see flashbacks of Cal when he was younger, and they've kept the same face on the child's body, and the voice doesn't change, and it is very weird.
So
that's enough about Cal.
We don't need to go further into that, but there is one hope, I think, for this game potentially, which is, you mentioned in your review as well that you had to crunch through the game in 4 days. So it was kind of an intense experience, which might have worsened the sentiment of having to slog through environments again and again.
I was thinking about this and I got very frustrated by the end, to like the point where I was just angry at the game because I was like, oh, why are you making me do this again?
Right.
And I think if I'd played this over several months, just trying to imagine how I would do it normally, I would probably be up for like the exploring and all of the planet stuff. And then by the time it would be asking me to go back to the planets, I think I would probably just keep playing it less and less. I think I would still hit that kind of wall where I'm like, don't want to do that again. I would be less frustrated.
So maybe less angry, but still not enthusiastic.
Still like unimpressed. And I would ultimately be annoyed that there's no kind of story payoff and everything's just kind of crammed in right at the end. So for like a vast chunk of the game, it really is like, go to this planet and fetch this thing.
All right, let's try.
Then go to another one.
let's try, and especially with so many, as we always say, there are so many great games. That's the kind of issue you face, is that when a game is not amazing, then it falls by the wayside because you want to play all the other amazing games. But let's say someone does want a fun 10 hours, 12 hours of Star Wars immersed game that is competent and actually fun, even if they don't necessarily need to go to the end of the game, and they don't, that's a lot of ifs.
If you just want to dip into it and you're not too bothered about the story, then you'll have a good time. And particularly if you like Soulsborne games, if you whack the difficulty up to Grandmaster, you'll get that like really intense challenge. And I did actually have quite a bit of fun, surprisingly, on the hard difficulty, just walking around the planet. I think doing like the boss fights, I would get very, very annoyed. There is stuff there, and I did really enjoy the kind of core gameplay. And I think if they'd actually just not done the reach-reversal stuff, I would have loved this game, and it would have been recommended. It's just, they've padded it.
It's so such a shame, because 20 hours is really, really long, but it seems like it's expanded artificially. And if they had just stopped at 12, it would have been fine. I don't think anyone is, these days, if it's a 12-hour solid single-player experience, especially for a mainstream game like this in a popular IP, no one would have faulted them for it. I mean, someone, but there's always someone who's being an ass.
Yeah, it's a shame that people are demanding that you get a certain amount of hours for your money, and I kind of get it, but if it ends up ultimately ruining the game you're playing, then it's just not worth it. Just stick to the smaller playtime and have a tighter experience.
All right. Well, I'm going to keep playing it. Hopefully I'm distracted by other games early enough that I never get to that sluggish feeling that you felt. But who knows?
Yeah, stick to the new planets. When the new planets stop, then it's time to have a break.
All right. Well, that is definitely a little bit disappointing, but I still think I'm going to have a few hours of fun ahead of me in the game. And I'm even if you tell me that it's going to be 10, 12 hours, I mean, I had to get it for work, but I think it's been so long since we got a good, fun Star Wars experience that I think it's probably worth it for me, but I guess buyer beware. All right. Let's talk a little bit about Modern Warfare. I think I mentioned getting it and gave maybe a couple of first impressions last time. I'm not even sure. But I finished the single player campaign, Call of Duty, of course, Modern Warfare. And
that was a big sigh.
Yeah, it's a good Call of Duty game, but they have this. It's probably, as people have said, I haven't played Call of Duty a lot in recent years. Huge fan of the original Modern Warfare, of course, as any self-respecting gamer would be. this one is made a big deal of bringing the horror and the reality of war into the game more poignantly, I guess. And the big question was, is it going to be done in an interesting, thoughtful manner, or is it just going to be some kind of, you know, buzzworthy violence for the sake of splashy violence? And I guess it's kind of neither, but closer to the latter. The gameplay is incredibly Star Wars. The gameplay is incredibly Call of Duty-ish. And that's not surprising. It's they keep improving things every year. And this one is just this cinematic experience with no huge notable moments. Like, the set pieces aren't as incredible as in some other games. I will say the production value on the cutscenes is mind-blowing. Like, the faces,
looks really pretty.
Oh my god, like, it looks like demos from, you know, those early console cycles where they show you what's going to be
possible. Like the maximum potential. Yeah.
And the faces look like, so the motion capture and the texturing and the detail on the faces,
yeah,
like,
everything's kind of like glistening. I don't know if that it's sparkling. It's amazing.
It's like it's the first time that I see faces, maybe in Death, like, usually you get Death Stranding level of excellence. This is one step just above. And it's like the first time I see faces and I'm like, this looks like the details. It's difficult to explain. The details of the face make it look like we're almost beyond the uncanny valley, right? It looks real.
I love even, you know, the townhouse level. It's just like when you're walking in, it's like there are vines on the wall that just look beautiful, and the brickwork and just the attention to detail is really remarkable. It's one of the best things about Modern Warfare, actually, is just how good it looks.
it's mind-blowing. But the townhouse level, actually, you give me a great transition to what I had an issue with in the game, or I'm not even sure I have an issue with it. It's just jarring. It's that feeling that sometimes they put you in the middle of those situations that are warlike, or, you know, so it's not a big spoiler, but at some point you get into a townhouse. As usual in the game, you have multiple locations in various parts of the world, and at some point you're in London, you go into a townhouse to take out the terrorist cell, so it's like SWAT type entry into the house, and you go floor by floor to get all of the terrorists inside the house. And of course, they have families with them. And you have to react very quickly when you enter each room to see if the person in the room is going to try to shoot at you, or is surrendering, essentially, or just crying curled up in a bowl in the corner, which already in itself is kind of disturbing. But it's just one example of that. There are multiple instances throughout the game, but they, at some point you're in one room and there is a woman who takes a gun and is aiming at you. So, of course, you shoot her to disable her. And it turns out there was her son lying in the bed next to her. And you see the son going to her dead mom, to his dead mom, shaking her and trying to wake her up. And that's like emotional torture. And it's like, I'm not sure what putting this into the game accomplishes.
In the townhouse level, it's like the baby, where if you shoot the baby too many times, the game basically tells you, are you serious? You get a little message with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, exactly. So people started doing stuff like trying to basketball grenades into the baby cot and stuff like that if they could get away with it. That's a problem with having that situation, is you can tell players not to do it, but they're going to try and do it because they've been told they're not allowed to. Becomes ridiculous.
That's just silly. And it's part of people, you know, it's still a game. So it doesn't, like, people are going to do these kinds of things. But my problem, or what I'm noticing, is throughout the natural progression of the game, you have several moments where you have these situations where you are put into a position to do something and you witness something, which is horrendous to witness. And it's like watching torture. And it doesn't seem like the game is actually trying to comment on the horrors of war. It's just showing them to you. And maybe there's value in this.
Yeah, it's shock factor a lot of the time, really, isn't it? Kind of edgy idea of kind of dark story.
And this being Call of Duty, it's hard not to read it as that. Maybe there was an intent from the designers to just present it neutrally and get you to form your own opinion. But it doesn't, you know, it just doesn't feel like something Activision would do.
No, I agree. I feel like they were very desperate for kind of like this Call of Duty's no Russian moment. And the campaign is packed with loads of things where it could be quite controversial, but in a way, because they've got so much of that, nothing actually sticks out. And it's just, they're kind of just throwing stuff in there to see what sticks.
And there's like 12 chapters, I think, something like that. And maybe 4 or 5 of them have moments like this.
And also, a lot of the way they do it sometimes is they turn it into mini games, which is really odd. You know, like the torture bit where you have to turn your head as they're trying to waterboard you, and it's like the Russian guy is like, "Yes, very good," in the background, and it just feels really weird, and it just trivializes that whole thing to the point where you're laughing at it rather than being like, "Oh yeah, this is serious."
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, and I was going to say sorry if this is like spoilers, I'm spoiling everything, but there's also a scene where you're playing as Farah, and she's
is the freedom fighter from Uzbekistan, which is essentially Afghanistan, which has been overrun by really evil Russians. Like, they are
the stereotypical Russian enemies,
and it's like Bond villain level.
And also, it's just not accurate to real world. If they're trying to like kind of base it on real world events, like the Russians would use proxy fighters, and it's just silly enough. I think they just want a really comical, well, not comical, but very cartoony idea of a villain that's very obvious.
That's another thing I had. We'll get back to the Farah moment you wanted to talk about, but since we're on this thread, nothing is ambiguous, really. Like, they have moments when they're like, "Oh, look, the good guys did something that you don't approve of. Isn't war complicated?" But really, it's just the evil guys are really evil, and the good guys are kind of trying their best. And sometimes, you know, some things that are difficult must happen. But there's no real moral ambiguity. Not really.
Exactly. It's the good guys occasionally cross over into like, "Oh, done something naughty," but they're very clear lines about who is good and who is bad in this game.
And when someone good does something bad, everyone else is like, "Oh, you're so bad. No, I cannot have that." And vice versa. Like, it's so, you wanted to talk about another Farah moment?
I've got so much to talk about in this game. at least it's good for conversation.
I guess so, yeah.
The Farah moment is when you pull out of rubble because her town has been bombed and like her mother's dead next to her.
That's really great.
Yeah. Like, it's horrible, but I think it kind of works as just being really claustrophobic and nasty. Yeah. And you often don't actually see, I think when you see on TV kind of news reporting on like what's going on in Syria or whatever, it's very much like, here's the Western view of what's going on. The fact that everyone's speaking English and you're kind of in that point of view is actually quite interesting, I thought. It just brought it in a bit more than you would normally see. But yeah, that's the good bit. And then it gets to the house and the Russian guy bursts in. And he shoots your dad. And then you're there with your brother. Your brother kind of runs off. And you're crawling around, hiding under bits of furniture. This is when it's like it goes off the rails and you can actually play. And there are kind of like knives and scissors and screwdrivers just kind of scattered around the floor. And you have to sneak behind, you have to pick up one of these items, sneak behind the Russian guy, and then stab his legs. And you have to do this 3 times. And in between those, he kind of shoots his gun and goes, "Oh, bitch," that kind of thing. Sorry.
No, it's but, fine. It's...
he does actually say that. And then she slides through grills, you know, like classic video game, kind of like crawling through spaces and stuff like that. And it's just, yeah, then finally on the 3rd time, it's kind of like the final boss level where you shoot the guy and you have to like stab him 3 or 4 times, something like that. And it's just, it's so video gamey that it just completely loses any kind of emotion or anything in that moment. It's just feels really lame. And they were trying, I think, really hard to make it a cinematic experience whilst also being like, yeah, we need to make this a gameplay experience, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, the gameplay kind of, the way they implement the gameplay pollutes any shred of messaging or thoughtful design they would have, because you're right, that moment could have been a very potent, well, you think you know what it's like looking at it on TV, but this is what it actually is like. And there is elements of this, you're right, throughout parts of this level. But then the Russian guy arrives and he's like this soulless horror thing that is like, essentially it's an ogre coming in the house and going like, "I'm going to eat the little children." And it's like,
it really is. It's not exaggerating at all.
Yeah. So yeah, it's disappointing in that sense. I guess there could be an argument for describing it as something that is thought-provoking, and I guess we've been talking about it for over 10 minutes, so there is some of that, but it's more, it's spoiled by the other elements of the game, and that's too bad.
I think the conversation is mainly revolved around game design rather than the actual kind of conversations that they probably were hoping people would have.
Any of those are actually so plasticky and Hollywood-y in the worst parts of that those trends that I think it diminishes or makes vanish the initial intent, if there was any.
I think the actual good levels in these Call of Duty campaigns are often the ones that they don't intend to be super controversial. Because if you think about the original Modern Warfare, and I think it was Death from Above, which is the one where you're basically piloting a plane and shooting people with dots on the ground, and people were going like, "Yeah, booyah!" in the background as like an encouraging thing. That was actually probably the best level because it really got that sense of separation from combat and asymmetrical warfare spot on. And I think in this Modern Warfare, actually, I did quite like the townhouse level, apart from the baby thing, which is bad, because it just does a really good job. If you, particularly if you play this on realism mode, because it turns off the HUD, of just doing a really tense level and giving you an idea of what special forces would actually do in this kind of situation. I mean, it's obviously not completely realistic, but I think that kind of, not knowing what you're going to encounter in each room and civilians embedded with terrorists is actually, interesting. And that is probably the best bit for me. But they could have taken the baby out.
No, but you're right. That I guess they held back a little bit on the first Modern Warfare, or maybe they went all out and that's what happened. But there is a scene in this one that is akin to the one, the Death from Above one, where you are also in a helicopter and you have that black and white view. But there's so much of the booyah and they overdo it a little bit.
They're forcing it.
it feels like they're forcing it. Maybe that's how, people actually behave in those situations, but it doesn't work as well. Or maybe games have evolved and we're used to it. I don't know. But the fact is, in this one, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's way too much time spent on Modern Warfare. I didn't think it was good.
But it always happens.
The bottom line is, it's a good Call of Duty game if you're looking for a good Call of Duty game. If you haven't played Call of Duty for a long time and you're looking for this one to maybe bring back, light the fire back from the old ones and bringing you the kind of emotion and set piece moments that you had in the initial Modern Warfare, I don't think it's going to do that. So, all right. Or not as much as you would hope. Not a bad game, though. Death Stranding came out last week. I played just a little bit of it. Somewhat controversial game. I noticed that it seems the French reviewers are liking it very much, or mostly, and the English language reviewers think it's a load of BS, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I think it's like a European-American divide. Actually, it's weird. We're getting it with Star Wars as well. I don't know what it is. And Kojima has actually... there was a thing with like Kojima's comment being a bit mistranslated to say that like Americans are more into first person shooters. But I do wonder if there is something different about the tastes across the pond, because sometimes just come out with completely different opinions on games.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the X19 Xbox Insider thing and you'll understand that Americans have specific tastes for everything. But, I mean, there's no question that this is a strange and understandably divisive game, even amongst, you know, my countrymen. There are some people who think it's completely nonsensical and some people who applaud the interesting game design. So, of course, Kojima is a, I don't want to say controversial character, although that might be accurate, but he tries different things. And certainly with Death Stranding, there were a lot of questions, and I guess still are, about what the game is, what the story is, what the gameplay is. And it turns out it really is a delivery simulator, except they delivery quest
future delivery.
Yeah, but he made the act of running from one place to the other interesting from a game design standpoint. You know, some people think so. I've played a few hours. I haven't played a lot, but I have to say that the story, which I'm usually completely allergic to with Kojima. Except for the first Metal Gear Solid, which was genius. But the story has engrossed me. I've been engrossed in that story, or that's maybe a strong word. I'm very much interested in knowing what happens next and what's what this is all about. And it might be that down the line I don't get an answer and I'm very disappointed. But I think the whole thing is interesting and is intriguing.
I'd much rather someone take a big gamble and it not entirely pay off than do a safe game, which everyone's just going to kind of enjoy. And that will be it. We'll forget about it. People are going to remember Death Stranding for a long time, I think, just if not for the weirdness. And I'm also very grateful for all of these videos that are coming out of people kind of falling over and losing their gear. oh, gosh, they're amazing. I've seen someone stumble on a bridge and their entire stack of stuff just fall into the river and go floating off. It's incredible. I haven't been able to play it yet, but that kind of thing makes me want to. And I'm quite up for wandering around in games for a long time if it's fairly chill, although that doesn't look as relaxed in that bit. But
yeah, it can be a little bit frustrating. It feels almost like first of all, we were talking about beautiful looking games, and this is gorgeous. The faces are almost as good as Modern Warfare, not quite there, but almost. And I find the acting, especially from Norman Reedus, who doesn't do much, he's basically just looking annoyed and grunting most of the time, but it fits perfectly. And it's just the movie making chops of Kojima, I think, are showing here, and he's achieving something with that part of the game. And then the world building is really successful, and the gameplay elements are incredibly different. I mean, it feels very inspired by Zelda Breath of the Wild, like the exploration feeling you get is very strong, and there seems to be some bleed over from that game. But he does things that, as you said, no one has really done before, and it mostly makes for some people at least, interesting gameplay. The having to choose the path you're going to take, balancing literally and figuratively the equipment you have to get through that zone, avoiding looking at the signs that other people have posted online that show up in your game with this asynchronous multiplayer type of gameplay that has
That bit to me sounds fascinating. Like, I haven't played it yet, but like leaving likes for other people. Like, how does that work exactly?
Well, it's the likes are just if you build a structure, it can be seen in some other people's games once they have unlocked this area. And so since traversing the environment is the main gameplay element, those can be very helpful. So if you have a ladder going across a river, that will be very helpful to you, and you can see them appear from other people in the game, in, you know, who have played the game. And then you can like them. But there's also elements that you can put, kind of like in Souls games. Again, you know, this is really like the Souls games design genius influencing every other game in the industry. We've been talking about this for years and years, but it's still showing, and it shows how important they were from a game history point of view. But anyway, so they can leave signs that say, So the rain is damaging to you and your equipment in the game. And there are people who can put signs saying you can be safe from the rain here. And you don't know this. You have to look at the environment to find sort of a cliff that bends over and that you can go under to be safe from the rain. But if someone has put a sign there, you know you'll go there, and probably it will be that, and they won't be
hopefully they're not trolling you.
But yeah, so there's that element as well. I have to mention, a lot of people think this is pointless and the story is pointless and the gameplay is boring after a few hours, so that definitely has to be said. And I think I might myself after a few hours just be done with it, because it's not as compelling as in the first few hours. But I just didn't expect it to be that compelling in the first few hours to begin with, so I'm surprised by that already. I wouldn't recommend it as a purchase for anyone, though, because it's such a, not polarizing, but it's such a specific type of thing that you're either gonna love it or hate it, and there's no way to tell beforehand. So I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, well, I might give it a go. It sounds like a Christmas game where I can just sit there and play it for a few hours and just kind of chill a bit. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's chill, but at the same time, not that chill, because when you're walking around, you have to pay attention to what you're carrying, and it might...
Oh, yeah, the baby's crying, right, as well?
Well, that's the thing. Sometimes the baby starts crying. Sometimes there's rain that you have to get away from. Sometimes there's those weird specter-looking things, the BTs, that are chasing you, or you have to walk around carefully in, like, stealth kind of gameplay. So it's not as chill. Like, you almost want it to be more chill than this. It's And I understand that, you know, 60 hours of just walking around might not be what a game is, but it's almost like it invades your chillness of walking around with the gameplay elements that are a little bit overbearing.
I see.
So
I got that a little bit with, like, Red Dead Redemption 2, actually, because often you'd just be admiring the scenery and then it would kind of force, like, an event on you or something like that.
A bear comes running at you and mauls you.
Yeah, or it's like some bandits show up and you're like, fine.
I feel like this game, Death Stranding, might be a strong candidate for story mode. You know, there's this super easy setting where it's really just to do the story. And that might be something that I never do this in games, but I might consider this in this one because, yeah, we'll see. But yeah, that's just... early impressions, and we'll see how things evolve for this game. But it will be coming to PC, by the way, in 2020 on both Steam and the Epic Game Store towards summer. So there you go. I do want to mention, however, the fact that Did you see the product placement?
Oh gosh, yeah. No, I did see a photo of the drinks on the table.
Yeah. the monster drink, like they are.
Oh, gosh, so immersion shattering.
Ah, it is. And the funny thing is, people are noticing it and noting it and saying, "Ah, oh, you know, that is, that's not so great, but okay, whatever." Had any other game or any other creator done this, they would have been crucified on every, like, especially a publisher. They would have been crucified. And because it's Kojima, it's fine. I guess, you know, he
get a free pass. Yeah.
But it's really funny because the monster drink product placement is so obnoxious. So obnoxious. It's front and center. They talk about it. It's, oh my
God. They talk about it? Oh no, I
didn't
know that.
They mention it a couple of times.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
I believe so.
Oh gosh.
I think I remember Norman Reedus mentioning monster, or maybe I just, it was so much in my face that I,
yeah, it's ingrained.
It,
yeah. You were hearing it.
Yeah. So that's trending. Strange, but it's good to have different things, as you said, sometimes. And, for me, Kojima managed, no matter what the end result on the game is, there was so much writing against him, at least in my mind. Like I've always thought he's a diva. He was, you know, at least kept on track by his production people at Konami. And once he's left on his own, he's going to go completely crazy and it's not going to work. And he's not going to release the game before 2030. And it's released. Yeah, it's playable. It's interesting. I'm even intrigued by it. So I'm eating crow and my hat and everything on this one. And I have to congratulate him on that because completely upended my expectations. So if nothing else, there's that. Pokemon, again, so many games. Pokemon,
oh my God,
Sword
all in one
and Shield is out. It's reviewing okay. It's like a par for the course for a Pokemon game. I don't know that I have much to say about the game itself. I'm not a Pokemon player. And I don't think this one, I always hope that the next one is going to be the one that gets me into the series, but it seems like it's really very much a standard Pokemon game. Are you a Pokemon fan at all?
Yeah, no, I used to play, I think my first kind of Pokemon game that I played properly was Diamond and Pearl. And then I played like Heart Gold and things like that. So I have played quite a few of the kind of mainline games and a bit of Pokemon Go as well. But it's another one of the really divisive games at the moment for some reason. I don't know.
Unexpectedly, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the fan base is really riled up at the moment because of some of the design decisions for this game. Dexit, as it's been termed. God, we've got to stop calling things after Brexit. It's too much.
That's too depressing. So Dexit, for those who don't know, is the name that has been given to the fact that the Pokemon Dex, the collection of Pokemon you can gather, has been reduced for this game and brought back to the original 151, I think. I mean, there are different ones, but it's the number of the original game. Whereas, is that accurate? In previous games, they would just add Pokemon? And so you could always,
you'd
have
always
the ones
be able
you
to
had
kind of like import Pokemon from the old games into that game. Like the models or whatever they were using would be there for it.
The main controversial element is that apparently some people think or claim that Game Freak, the developer of the game, which by the way, when there's a controversy, everyone talks about Game Freak. As it relates to Pokemon, and when people are happy with it, all of a sudden it's Nintendo that beats Pokemon. You know, like Nintendo is in this weird place where they can do no wrong, and I think it's the only company left that still has fanboys that are mostly positive. It's like people who love it no matter what. They won't necessarily go and be aggressive towards others like some fanboys do or did, but they are so devoted to Nintendo. It's interesting. But anyway, so about Pokemon, since there is some negativity, it's Game Freak. Of course, Nintendo, which doesn't actually
hashtag
make Pokemon.
Game Freak lied was going for a little bit.
And so the lie is that Game Freak supposedly said that they wanted to make sure that the models and the animations of the Pokemon were very developed for the game, and so they reduced the number of Pokemon in the game. And what people discovered, quote-unquote, was that they were reusing models from previous games on the Switch, and so they lied because they didn't actually reduce them to make better models. They just reused stuff from before, which there's a great article in Polygon, which kind of explains that this is not really what they said and not really what's happening. But it seems that the underlying issue is that I think that makes sense. A lot of people are frustrated that Game Freak keeps making Pokemon games for children-ish type ages when a lot of Pokemon fans have grown up. They started as kids, but they want games that are that keep evolving with them. But Game Freak keeps remaking the same game for kids. And maybe there's some frustration there that is showing up in that movement against
Game Freak. There is something to be said that it would be nice to see Pokemon move on a little. I think there's a danger of it just staying the same forever, and then people
Has
well, right? Exactly. I think normally it just updates with like a new mini game and things like that, and you know, and like it's minor changes and a few additions, but the Dexit thing as well, it's the first time you can't catch them all, which is like basically the main premise of Pokemon. It's like the tagline and everything, and I can see why people are upset about it. Personally, I don't think it would actually impact my enjoyment of the game because I was never really into that. But people who want to complete their Pokedex will be sad, and I think it's just the idea that you can't do that anymore more than like people actually wanting to do it.
And I think a lot of people are frustrated. Like, a lot of people, most people, started complaining about this before the game was out, so they didn't even get a chance to try it. There are some technical issues in the game, which I think I understand being disappointed in some things, but it's like the standard gamer outrage movement, where there are some reasons to be frustrated, but it seems to blow up to levels that are completely disproportionate with the problem that they're angry about. Maybe if I was a Pokemon fan, I would be equally outraged. I don't know. But
I am quite surprised at how cross everyone is. I think, the rhetoric online has been really horrible towards Game Freak. Yeah. It's gone beyond criticism towards harassment. And and harassing also reviewers who gave it a good score, which is really not okay. People might just enjoy the game. Who knew that? I think our own review, we found it was a little bit shallow at points. I think it doesn't have dungeons, unlike the kind of older games, which means that you can't really like go into a town and explore it fully in the kind of sense that you would previously. So there are definite criticisms to be made, but that people have taken it way too far.
Yeah, as often. You know, I know that a lot of people talk about entitlement, and some people are frustrated by that term, but there is some of that, and particularly in the gamer communities, which we're all parts of, so I guess it's on us as well. But there, when you see things like this happen, I'm sorry, there is entitlement. Like, if the game isn't what you hoped for, I understand you're a fan of the series, but sometimes games aren't as good as you would have hoped. And it happens, and it you can be upset about it, but going as far as those things go is, it's not just like it's never okay, because then
it's kind of like the suggestion that the developers are trying to like dupe fans and things like that. It's when it gets to the point where it's like, oh, you're lying deliberately.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure they were trying their best with what they had, and like maybe some bad decisions were made along the way. But it's not like the developers are trying to ruin Pokemon for you. it is weird. People need to take a step back.
There's also an interesting discussion to be had, which we won't have here. But for long-running series like this, how do you evolve it to keep
nice
long
Pokemon
fans? That was solely intentional. But how do you evolve it to keep long-term fans or long-time fans interested while keeping it welcoming to new players? And it seems, you know, this isn't really that new. It seems Pokemon has always been geared towards the new players. Maybe it wasn't as apparent because it was always 2D-ish type games. Even on 3DS, it wasn't like, you know, full home console type stuff. And maybe this, the transition to this one, people were hoping for more, which I can understand, but it's still a difficult design decision to be had. And maybe Game Freak eared too closely to the let's not change anything aspect.
Yeah, and I guess it's the pressure of having like an annual, practically annual release of Pokemon now. It can't stop because people are expecting it. And it also means that they can't really do anything spectacular because they just don't have the time. I think I've heard that Game Freak likes to keep the studio size quite small, to kind of contain the feeling of Pokemon and like kind of more focused creative input. So maybe the future of Pokemon is in spin-off games where they can be a bit weirder. they're just torn between trying to keep the nostalgia and also appeal to kids and adults at the same time. Like, I really don't envy them that task at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's little question that this is not a great a great version of Pokemon. Everyone seems to agree on that. It's not the best. Maybe, you know, the hashtag should have been Game Freak released a disappointing game and not just Game Freak Lite, but yeah. All right, so I guess that won't be my long-hoped for first entry in the Pokemon series because there are too many other games.
Yeah, I might try it for the curry.
The curry apparently making, there's like a the 150 versions.
Yeah, of curry the curry deck. Cook? Yeah, I'm in it for basically Pokemon Cooking Mama. I'll do that.
Listen, you only have 151 Pokemons. But you also have 150 curries. So that's basically
I'll take it.
I'm going to Japan in a few months. I can't wait to eat.
Oh, you could try the curries.
Yeah. Hopefully there will be a curry Pokemon restaurant that I can try all of them at. All right. Let's talk about news and the X19, show that they're having in London. Microsoft is having in London for Xbox. They do it in a different city every year. Last year it was in Mexico, I believe. And they had a big Inside Xbox event streaming thing to open that event. And it was, as I joked about at the beginning of the show, those things, to me at least, are always disappointing. In form and substance, form because it's so Xbox. Oh my God!
They really do drag it out. It's like, ooh, this could probably have been done in half the time at least.
and they're like on stage and they're like edgy people and I don't even know if I should say this, but I don't really like Larry Herb. I'm sorry. I know he's like Major Nelson is such a fixture in the industry and he's a great. And manages the community and he's great for Xbox, but he feels like he's just like out of place.
Yeah, just like having a dad at like your party at uni or something. It's weird.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Thank you, Emma. It's like he feels like a dad crashed into the and the thing is, all of the other hosts also feel like they're 15 years older than they appear to be. That's like they I don't know. Anyway, that's just form. And they're cheering and like, yeah. And so
I'm surprised they managed to get British people to cheer. I was really shocked. Where did they find these people? No one makes noise in Britain. We all just politely clap.
Maybe they imported Americans to go along with the stages. But you know, it's like they got people to cheer for, like, I don't know, the announcement of the name of a studio. Like a company has opened a new development studio to do things we haven't heard about yet. And their name is their name is Keyboard Warriors. And like, clap, clap, clap.
Like woo, what? I guess. What? Yes.
So anyway, that is, I say this every time there's an Xbox Insider. But for this one, even though the form was still disappointing, I think the substance was much better than it's been in the past. They had a lot of announcements, none of them with a lot of details, but at least there was some things to chew on. And I'm going to go over a number of the games they announced or announced dates for, and then we can discuss a little bit more towards the end for the bigger announcements. But There's Grounded from Obsidian, which looks a little bit like Fortnite Save the World, not Battle Royale. Four-player co-op, build and then defend against bugs invading.
That famously went well.
There's a new Rare IP called Everwild, which looks really enchanting.
That looks pretty. Ooh. Yeah, I'm up for that. Whatever it is.
I think we don't know. It's just they shot a trailer.
I think people were just kind of guessing at action adventure, but we literally just have that trailer. That's it.
Wasteland 3 has a release date of May 2020, or this window. We got an update on Bleeding Edge, the Ninja Theory multiplayer battling game in March. And that game still looks like the characters are, you know, I can't help but compare it to Overwatch. And maybe it's because I play Overwatch so much, but I don't know if you're a fan of Overwatch. If you're not, you can tell me if I'm being biased. But characters in Overwatch, you take one look at them and they look charming. And like, even if
they're quite individual,
right?
You know what's going on. You're like, oh yeah, that character.
And in Bleeding Edge, they're all like, their dial was turned up to 11 on the, I guess, edgy. And they all look like, I don't know, they look like blah.
A bit uniform,
It's not even about uniform. They're like, they're so exaggerated that they kind of don't have character anymore. I don't know. It feels weird, but.
No, I like looking at that. I'm not thinking like, that looks like something that I'd be interested in, even just kind of from the artwork. But I don't know. It's kind of flown under my radar quite a lot.
Yeah, it's been in beta. It's been in beta for a few months, a closed beta. And I mean, the game itself might be interesting. I shouldn't, forget from saying that. It might be interesting. It's a 4v4 battle thing that could be fun. Coming out in March. Life is Strange. The Dontnod is developing a new game called Ask Me Why, The Reasons Why. Tell Me Why. There you go.
That's the one.
Tell Me Why, which has a trailer. It looks a little bit like Life is Strange from a gameplay standpoint. And the notable thing is that it has a trans character. So that's an interesting element. What else? Flight Simulator update. It looks really good for people who like simulators.
It just looks so good. I really want to play that game.
I feel like I want to play it, and just like any other flight simulator type game, it's so complicated to just take off on a plane that I'm going to try and crash 15 times and then stop. But it's going to be in, like many of the other games we mentioned, it's going to be in Game Pass, so I'm going to try it. Age of Empires 4 got a trailer, which it looks really good. Halo Reach is coming to the Master Chief Collection this December, so not quite as early as some people had hoped, but it will also be on PC, so Halo fans can replay Reach, which is kind of a prequel to the Halo series, if I'm not mistaken. Yakuza is coming to the Xbox with the first three chronologically. So Zero, Kiwami 1, and Kiwami 2 coming to the Xbox. They will be in the Xbox Game Pass. And Final Fantasy, there's like 10 titles coming to the Xbox Game Pass as well. And finally, we can discuss all of this, but to round up the announcements, a bunch of things on xCloud, the streaming service, is going to be coming to PC in 2020. We don't know when, but in 2020, adding multiple controller type support, including the DualShock 4 from PlayStation, of course. They will also, something really interesting they announced, it's going to be available in more countries, I think Canada, Japan, Western Europe. And they will also have the Xbox Game Pass games that are into xCloud will be available if you have Xbox Game Pass. Essentially, you pay for Xbox Game Pass, you can stream the xCloud games for free. Or install them if you want, but you can also stream them to any device. So that was kind of expected, but xCloud is going to be part of Xbox Game Pass, which is a great announcement. It means you can install or stream the games for the price of the Xbox Game Pass once it comes to your locale. And most of the games we mentioned are going to be included in there. So That's even more of a compelling service than it was before. Emma, thoughts?
On all of it?
on any of it you want, or none of it if you don't have much to add.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I was most excited about is Flight Sim, to be honest.
Really?
What's wrong with me? And also Everworld. The Obsidian game looks okay, I think. I'll see what happens.
So that's the grounded Fortnite
type. Yeah, grounded. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm interested to see what the first kind of Microsoft Obsidian game looks like.
It's definitely surprising for an Obsidian game, but I think
RPG to survival, okay, sure.
I think no one has quite managed to make a co-op survival game successful, a four-player co-op survival type game. There is space for this in the gaming space, and no one has managed to make one successful yet, or it's been a long time. I think the closest one that comes to mind that was really successful is Left 4 Dead, and it was obviously a very different type of game. But there is a place for getting together with your friends in something that is not PvP, where you're going to get crushed and depressed half the time, and something that isn't like Destiny, where it takes over your life. And I know there are some games that do this, but I think there isn't one that is like the thing everyone's playing. So I don't know that Grounded is going to be that, but it's good that people are still, and companies are still exploring that space.
Sure.
Okay, you're not convinced. I thought I was presenting a really compelling argument.
That was like a kind of agreeing, like, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, so overall, a pretty cool Xbox Insider. It's much better than the ones we usually get, I think. And I'm also excited to try out Flight Simulator a couple of times. Looks really good. The thing that's different from previous Flight Simulators is how better graphics have gotten. And
just like, how big it's going to be. Holy cow.
You can actually try to fly a Boeing 747. So that the simulator part is, of course, interesting because you can try things as they are in real life. And there is something very compelling about actually being in front of a super complicated and intimidating console of a 747 and trying to fly it yourself. It's going to be fun for everyone, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about streaming, Stadia is launching in just a few days. Or should I say launching, really?
Gosh, it's such a soft launch. It's like...
So I've been saying for months that this is a beta and that they should have called it a beta, a paid-for beta. And they had an AMA on Reddit just a few days ago. And essentially, they explained how many of the features that were announced or promised were not going to be available at launch. And some of the features that are core to what they were selling as the experience of this platform. It's mind-boggling. There's like things like multiplayer, like I can't remember the name, but when you can see multiple instances of the game on your screen, when you're playing with friends, that is not going to be available. You won't be able to use a Chromecast Ultra that you already own.
There was something about, like, you can rack up trophies, but the UA won't show you the trophies until later.
Right. It will be their trophy system, or UI at least, is not complete. So they will count them, but you won't see them, or like they will only appear in a few weeks or months when they will have that feature complete. Like, it is such a beta. It's like everyone is frustrated by this. None of this would have been a problem if they had said, we're starting a beta. You can buy your entry into it for $129 if you want, and it will launch in 2020.
Yeah, and they could have really pushed it as like, you guys are going to be on the forefront of like this modern tech, and you're going to be helping kind of push it forwards. And I think people would have still been up for that, whereas presenting it as like a finished product with like just no exclusive games. It's just stuff that's been out for a while.
Like the it's not just no exclusive games. Like there's one, the Guilt, like indie game, but yeah, the other ones are not even recent. Like, at launch, there's 12 games. I'm going to read through the list. AC Odyssey, Destiny 2 Complete, that Guild exclusive one, Just Dance 2020, Kine, I'm not sure what that is, Mortal Kombat 11, Red Dead Redemption 2, Rise of the Tomb Raider, all three Tomb Raiders, Samurai Showdown, and Thumper. All of these games are old. And remember, which I don't think that's a problem, but for the test, you don't get them by buying into the beta, except for Destiny 2. You have to buy them. Most people who are going to get this beta probably already have those games. Probably. Or at least the ones they're interested in. So if you want to try it out, you're probably going to be trying Destiny 2 because it comes with the Founders Edition. But I don't think many people are going to buy an additional game on that platform rather than buying it on another platform, which is more reliable. And there are 14 more games coming by the end of the year, but it's kind of the same deal, except for Darksiders Genesis, I guess, which is a little bit more recent. But the other ones are, you know, Farming Simulator 19, Borderlands 3, Metro Exodus. All of those, Wolfenstein Youngblood, all of those would look kind of okay, but you have to buy them. Again, this won't be an issue when the system actually launches and you don't have to pay for access. It will be streaming 1080p everywhere for free, so you buy the game and you can stream it everywhere, so that will be an option. But currently, for that quote-unquote beta, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, and I just don't understand why they didn't go with the subscription. Oh, gosh.
Well, I mean, subscription, you would have to get really serious dealing in place with the developers and publishers. I can understand why that would be more complicated and why you would think, well, we have an interesting offering, which is you don't need to buy the console, and that in itself, and since we can advertise it on YouTube and everything, and maybe there are going to be some free-to-play games, you just press a button and literally you're playing within 10 seconds. That is compelling enough already. The issue is there's going to be xCloud coming fairly soon, and you know PlayStation Now is making movements as well, which are going to offer this as well, except you also have a subscription.
It's just going to end up cut out, I think, of the market for streaming. And I just don't know who the kind of target market is with... I just don't know who they're aiming for, because like all of the hardcore gamers already have their setups and they've got their stuff. They're on Xbox, they're on PlayStation, they've got streaming services that are coming... I just don't know who's going to be buying this. Like, I don't think kind of really casual game players are going to be convinced to start wading into this as it currently stands.
I don't know. I think there is some. I think there's some value to this for people, because people are going to be switching generations, and you're going to buy one console. If there's another one that is, I'm sorry, a game that is not available on the console you have, but is available on Stadia, for example, or you know, on any of the streaming services, then it's one click away, literally. Not very few people are actually going to buy all the consoles for the next generation. Well, I mean, the two consoles from the get-go. And as things move forward, I think streaming is going to become part of a lot of people's gaming routine. Before they even realize it, it's going to be like 20%, 30%, 50% of their gaming time is spent streaming. I don't know that it's necessarily going to be on Stadia, but I wouldn't discount them because of the power of Google and YouTube and all of those things. Because they might do a subscription down the line. I think Microsoft is much better positioned because they have everything, right? They have the hardware and the software and the subscription and the streaming, everything. But I wouldn't discount Stadia because they can always do more things differently in the future. They could create a subscription at some point, or they could include in their pro tier some games every month, and they've hinted at that already. I just think that
if anyone's got the money to make this work, it's Google. If they want to, they can probably turn it around. I just wonder if they'll look at how this launch goes and think, not that much interest, because of the soft launch nature of it. It really depends on whether they want to support this idea going forward.
Yeah, I think this really should be considered like a tech beta. They're not going to have a lot of interest from a wide amount of gamers because it's $120-130 for nothing. It's really going to be tested commercially when it's available for quote unquote free. At that point, and when you can click into a YouTube video and be launching the 2 hours trial of a new game that just came out, like, as I said, in 10 seconds, you're going to be trying the, I don't know, you know, Doom was supposed to be included in this, the new Doom. Once it comes out in March or April, whatever it is, and you can watch a YouTube video about it from your favorite streamer or YouTuber, you click at the end, and you are actually playing the game in 10 seconds to try it, because they're going to have a 2 hours demo or whatever, then the game is going to be on. but this, anyone who considers this launch as the real, or this period as the real test for Stadia, I think is mistaken. This means nothing.
Agreed.
This means nothing. All right, talking about streaming, Shadow, which is a French startup, Blade rather, which runs the Shadow PC service, which is a streaming service for a full Windows PC, just announced a couple of weeks ago that they have a new pricing structure, which starts at about $15 a month. And they're available in many states in the US. I don't know if they're available in the UK, but it's a different type of streaming offering because they just give you access to your PC where you can do anything you want. It used to be a lot more expensive, but now at this price, I think it might be interesting for some people. And I have been playing around with it for a few years. And this latest trip I took to Paris, I tried it again, and it works so well. So well. It is like, again, people who think streaming technology cannot work, I have not tried it. It is almost indistinguishable from running the game locally. I played Overwatch, which I played a lot. I play a lot all the time. It works incredibly well. Of course, I was on, you know, fiber, and you need that if you want those services. But and $15 a month, I think for some people it might be an alternative because you have your environment, you install whatever you want. Mm-hmm. The games don't have to be specifically designed for that specific streaming service, and it works. So.
But the future is Shadow, maybe.
Yeah, it's possible. I think it's going to be a small part of the market. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're going to get bought up by a bigger company that wants to get into that technology. But the thing is, you really can run it on any type of PC, and you can, you know, they're going to be upgraded regularly. So you just have your device, your machine, and you don't worry about anything else. You don't have to upgrade your own PC. It's going to run most games pretty well. And if you pay a little bit more, it's going to run all games really well. Like, there's a $30 tier where you have a 2080 for a graphics card. So I'm actually going to be able to try ray tracing without upgrading my PC because I have access. I pay for that tier. It's an interesting development for Shadow, and it makes them one of the many options in that market. And Steam is also testing cloud gaming. Apparently, they're making amendments to their contracts to include streaming into their service. So if you buy a game on Steam, not only can you install it, but you can also stream it. Or at least that's what we're guessing is going to happen. I would guess that they're partnering with someone, either Amazon, Microsoft, or Google for this, which, by the way, something I didn't mention. I think Stadia is a testbed for making white label services offered to other developers and publishers. And I think Google wants to sell Stadia tech to others. And it wouldn't surprise me if Steam, Valve, was using, for example, Google's infrastructure for that purpose, which makes it so that you can install a game or stream it if you want when you buy it on Steam, which would be a really interesting additional service for Steam, I think. All right, a bunch of additional little bits of news. Red Dead Redemption 2 is on PC, mm-hmm. and it doesn't work.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I've been messing around with Red Dead on PC quite a lot because I'm really intrigued by the modding possibilities. So people have started doing, like, you could turn into a horse and things like that, and an eagle and fly around. It's great. Anyway, I was having fun with it on the work PC, and then I went home and tried to use it on my home PC, which is like a pretty decent one. It should be able to run stuff on high, at least, if not ultra. And to start with, I had to like update my driver, and then it was the next stage was kind of, it was freezing a lot. It was like every 15 seconds I would get a freeze, and it would be like a 5 second freeze. It was significant. And yeah, Rockstar's been updating the launcher to try and fix stuff, but the first few days it just had these ridiculous threads of people on Reddit being like, oh, maybe disable your antivirus software, and it was so silly. And I think they've apologized now and said that they're working on it, but yeah, not a good launch, really.
I mean, the game is already on all the platforms, so yeah, it's on PC as well, but
yeah, I think the appeal was having it on like those ultra settings, right, and being like, oh, look how beautiful it is, and then it's like it's not running right.
And there's this
pretty disappointing,
this weird green mist everywhere that people have been getting. And I mean, yeah, it's, I don't know what to do with these stories anymore, because it's like, yeah, game launch is broken on PC, and then they work on it to fix it. Okay, it always, not just on PC actually, but I don't know, this is just kind of a fact of life. And I don't believe that developers are like, yeah, we're going to launch it broken, and then whatever, they'll just buy it anyway. You know, that's not how it works, but I don't know.
I can imagine them all scrambling over at Rockstar, like, oh.
At the same time, it's, yeah, exactly. But at the same time, we're not happy that it launches broken and people have paid for it. But
yeah,
it's like,
particularly as they had a year to kind of work on that port.
Yeah. It's like, it's been, I don't know. It's weird. I mean, it's definitely not a great look for Rockstar. John Carmack is leaving his position as CTO as Oculus, and he'll be like consulting CTO, and he's working on AI stuff now, which, I mean, Carmack is a legendary developer, especially on the tech side of things in the gaming industry. His work on VR has not been super visible, I guess. I mean, Oculus obviously is very successful in advancing the technology. AI, maybe there's something interesting there that Carmack is going to do, because he's very talented. But I don't know. Is it a good sign for Oculus or Carmack or the opposite? I don't know. But it's a thing that's happening. Hey, so do you still follow Fortnite?
Yeah, a little bit less so. I think I'm having a little Fortnite break, although I do want to go back and play Chapter 2. I haven't really had much time lately because everything's been releasing at the same time.
But that's what happens in the holiday season. Have you been following the FaZe Jarvis
controversy? I did hear about this, yeah, and like how the British tabloids are like going to town on this guy, having like previously been like, wow, he's won so much money. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so what?
I get the gist that he basically recorded himself using like an aimbot and uploaded that. Yeah, I don't know what you're expecting, but
he did that, and he got banned for life from Fortnite. And there was a whole drama that started around him, apparently, and I don't think he was really part of the drama. A lot of people were like, oh, but it's his livelihood. This is super extreme for someone who is 17, doesn't really know what they're doing. And others are like, well, he used a cheating aimbot thing, and that's normal. What do you want them to do if not ban him? And it seems that, like, I ended up watching his video that he posted a few days after, and he's super mellow, super down to earth, and reasonable. And he's like, you know, people make mistakes sometimes, and it's been a crazy ride in the past year. I'm really young. I don't always know what I'm doing, but I'm going to take a little bit of time off, and I'll be back, and I'll keep making videos because I love it. And it's like, the guy is super reasonable and relatable. Maybe it's just, you know, he manicured this video, but Yeah, everything happened the way it was supposed to. I do think that banning him for life is a bit harsh, but...
Yeah, probably just wanted to make an example of him.
I guess. Or maybe they didn't even know that that account... Maybe they did know that it was him. Maybe it was an example, but anyway. It's like he is dealing with this, it seems very, very like an adult and much better than people arguing about how he should be dealing with it. So just wanted to mention it. What else? EA is partnering with Valve to enable EA Access on Steam. So if you have EA Access, you'll be able to use those games on Steam as well, which is really cool. And I think this is going to play into the streaming thing, which EA is also getting into with Project Atlas, which I believe is a white box of Amazon mm-hmm. services. So yeah, streaming everywhere. And I guess that's going to be it. There are a couple of other things that really don't matter, like phone games from Epic, Legend of Runeterra, new mode, which I still don't have access to. What's happening there? And Minecraft Dungeons has launched, or well, it will launch in 2020, but I think it's available in more countries. So everyone is playing it in my timeline on Twitter. I won't, but yeah, it seems pretty cool. Oh, no, yeah. Sorry, I meant Dungeons, not Earth. Dungeons is April 2020, which that looks kind of cool. But Earth is available, I think, in the US at least, or if not more widely, and everyone's playing it. Mm. Yeah, and that's it. Wow, that is busy. a lot of stuff to talk about. Thanks for being with me on this show, Emma.
Thank you so much. It's been good. Good chats about
everything.
Some controversial games.
Yeah. If people want to hear or read more from you, I guess eurogamer.net, where can they find you?
My Twitter is probably best, which is @GoneEFK.
Excellent. The link will be in the show notes. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find this show at frenchspin.com. You can comment on everything we said. Please do so if you feel we were right or wrong. It happens sometimes in any of the topics we discussed. And we will be back in a couple of weeks for another episode. Thank you so much, Emma. And thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.